Repay to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and to God what belongs to God. That line, that quotation from Jesus, occurs in Mark and Matthew and in Luke and in the non-canonical Gospel of Thomas. So there's every indication to think that this is one of the sayings of Jesus that has come down to us relatively unedited. Then repay to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and to God what belongs to God. Now, when you hear that quotation, particularly here in Washington, D.C., I imagine you then expect a homily on church-state relations, on religious freedom, or on tax cuts. And actually, Chuck Todd was going to be here to moderate a conversation on that, but he got tied up in traffic from the Marine Corps Marathon. So I think the problem is, when we hear phrases like that that have become so well used, we tend to think of it primarily in our context and our setting, because after all, we are the most important, aren't we? And we have to somehow extricate ourselves from that to hear originally what might have been heard by Jesus's hearers. So the first thing we have to do is figure out where we are in the Gospel of Matthew. We are getting towards the end of Matthew's Gospel. Jesus has arrived in Jerusalem, his triumphal entry, and he's now teaching in the Gospel, in the temple. And there he's running into controversy with various groups. For the last 4 weeks, we've heard the parables that Jesus has told to respond to these various controversies. And parables, as you know, are not really answers. They're a question that answers a question. They're something that gets under your skin and makes you wonder what really is going on, makes you think about that response. But today we end the parables. Jesus is no longer telling parables. He's giving them a statement. But who is this them that he is giving the statement to? It's really important to understand that first century Judaism was, as one author, and I forget who this is, but it's a great phrase, first century Judaism was monotheistic but not monolithic. There was a belief in one God, but there were many different approaches to that belief. And Jesus being in the temple was surrounded by different kinds of Judaism. What kind of Judaism? Well, two are mentioned in the Gospel. First of all, the Pharisees. The Pharisees have to be put in contrast with the Sadducees. Let's start with the Sadducees. It's a little simpler. The Sadducees were concerned with temple worship and tended to be associated with the priestly class. They focused on Jerusalem and what went on in Jerusalem, and they tended to be the 1% of Jewish society at that time. The Sadducees, on the other hand, were much more interested in bringing Jewish life out of Jerusalem to the people in the towns and villages of Judea. All right? They were more popularizers than the Sadducees. Even though the Gospels portray Jesus as being in conflict with the Pharisees, a lot of what Jesus was doing was very similar to what the Pharisees were doing, as kind of the competition among equals rather than people that are completely opposed to one another. So you have Pharisees and Sadducees. The Pharisees are asking Jesus this question, but they bring along with them the Herodians. Who are the Herodians? The Herodians are Jews who had, well, you know the syndrome. They're the kind of people, like people here in Washington, that cozy up to powerful, wealthy people, namely King Herod, the puppet king of Galilee who had been set up by the Romans. The Herodians, therefore, were tightly entwined with the Roman governance. There are two other groups to know about, too. The Essenes, who were like monks, who were kind of towards the Sadducees side. And then, in a way, one of the more interesting groups, the Sicarii. The translation means the knife wielders. These were those Jews, otherwise known as the Zealots, who really could not stand Roman occupation of their homeland and would fight for freedom. They were the terrorist group of their time. Jesus in the temple is addressing a crowd which involves people of all these different types, right? In a way, think about Christianity and all the different flavors of Christianity, or to make it more real, think about all the various kind of tribes within Roman Catholicism. It's the same way as Jesus was facing in the temple in Jerusalem. So when he gets asked a question about Roman taxation, you can see that there isn't just one audience he's responding to. There are a lot of different people with different opinions about how he should answer to that. And no matter how he answers, he's going to annoy some people. If he says, yes, you should pay the census tax, he's going to annoy the more radical ones who didn't want anything to do with Rome. And if he says, no, you shouldn't pay the temple or the census tax, the Herodians and the Sadducees are going to be annoyed, and ultimately the Romans are going to be annoyed. So there really was no easy way for Jesus to respond to this. But Jesus, remember, tells parables. He doesn't give clear, definitive answers. He poses parables, and in a sense, his response today is parabolic. What he says is, he says, do you have a coin? Do you have this coin that's used to pay the census tax? Remember where this is happening, in the temple. And they say, oh yes, we have that coin. We're going to come back to that. But Jesus says, whose image and inscription are on the coin? Well, if we were to get a coin from that era, the image would have been the Roman emperor, who was Tiberius Caesar, and the inscription on that coin read, Caesar Augustus Tiberius, son of the divine Augustus. So that's the image and the inscription on that. Think about it. They're presenting this coin to Jesus in the temple precincts, with a graven image of it, the image of the emperor. First commandment says, you shall not have graven images. There it is. And the inscription, is it? The son of the divine Augustus. Son of the divine Augustus? You mean Augustus is a god? That's blasphemy. They are presenting Jesus with this coin that is blasphemous in the temple precincts, but here's where Jesus really caught them. They had the coin. They were asking him about whether they should pay the tax, but they actually were carrying the coin. They were prepared to pay that. That's why he refers to them as hypocrites. You're trying to trap me, but you yourself have that coin in your hand. A little footnote. Not all emperors are bad. That strange first reading about Cyrus, the king of Persia, 6th century. Cyrus is the one who liberated the Jews from the Babylonian captivity and actually encouraged the rebuilding of the temple in Jerusalem. And did you hear what Isaiah called him? He called him the anointed Cyrus. Anointed, we track that through different languages, the Messiah, the anointed one, the Messiah, this pagan king as the liberator, as the Messiah. So not all emperors are bad, but to learn more about Cyrus would require an entirely different homily. Back to the temple and the coin. So Jesus tells them to render to Caesar what belongs to Caesar and to God what belongs to God. It's a parabolic answer, isn't it? It's not a definitive one. It throws it back on the listener, it throws it back on the hearer to figure out what Jesus means. And throughout the centuries, lots of people have given opinions on what that means, and there is no one settled answer on what that means. It continues to be problematic in a really healthy way. What I'd like to suggest is a way of thinking about it that builds on that question Jesus asks about the likeness and the inscription. If we're going to determine what belongs to God, we need to think about what likeness and inscription are on the things that belong to God. Likeness. What kind of likeness do things of God have? Genesis chapter 1, verse 26. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our own likeness." Whose image, whose likeness, whose icon marks the things of God? It's the image of God which is found in every human being. We are the icons, we are the image of God. When looking what belongs to God, it is us. We are that image. So when rendering things of God back to God, it's talking about all of us and our relationship with each other, because we are the image of God. Well, what about inscription? How are we inscribed? Well, prescinding from a moment, any tattoos you may have inscribed on you. Yesterday, there was a baptism in the chapel, a communal baptism of three young individuals whose names are Juliana Acha, Aiden Highland, and Adeline Urschel. And as part of the baptism, of course, there's the pouring of the water, but then there's the saying of the words. I baptize you in the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. I baptize you in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Those children are then inscribed with that. They are the image of God, as we are told in Genesis, and they have been inscribed with the Trinitarian formulation. What things are the image and likeness of God? Human beings. So we are to render to God what is God's. That is all of us, brothers and sisters, people you like, people you can't stand. We are all that image and likeness. And also, it always strikes me, when we begin talking about Eucharist and devotion to the reserved sacrament and the concern about how that's carried out, which that's a particularly noble question to consider, but do we ever consider that after every Eucharist, after we receive communion, all of us are really little tabernacles that are sent out into the world? And if we're really serious about this image and likeness, it's each other that we should regard with as much respect as we regard that reserved sacrament in the tabernacle, because not only are we carrying the Lord within us, but we are the image and inscribed by God. In a brief phrase, we're the coinage of God. Give to God what is God's and to Caesar what is Caesar. Not the little pieces of silver, not material things. What we render to God is ourselves and one another. So in a sense, the most important part, at least for me, of the gospel today is not so much that final line, then repay to Caesar what belongs to Caesar and to God what belongs to God, but it is the question that Jesus places to those trying to trap him. It's the question that he places before all of us. Whose image is this and whose inscription? Whose image is this and whose inscription? The catechumens would come forward. My dear friends, take to heart the words of the second reading today. Remember that we always give thanks to God for you and remember you in our prayers. We await the day when you will share with us at the table of the Eucharist. Go in peace. I believe in one God, Father Almighty.